Good morning. So I'll start off with some logistics. So exams are graded. The grades are on the gradebook, which is now linked off the top of the main course website. In addition, you have the actual raw exams on TPEGS. We did a rubric thing to adjust the scores. Basically what I did is I went through the exam. I said, what I think someone who I want to give a C will get this, 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 and this wrong. What score is that? Let's make sure that's a C on the exam. So we're posted there. Regrades are open on TPEGS. The keys are on Colab in the resources folder. You can have, we'll have regrades open for a week or two. If you have complaints about things you think we did wrong. Other than that, we're going to move on to our next topic, which is going to be about making our processor faster. So we built our single cycle CPU, which we're going to in fact work on doing an HCL over the next couple weeks. Started on, and that's nice and straightforward, but it executes every instruction over one cycle. And we can do better than that. So we're gonna get something that's more efficient than that, but it's gonna be a bit less straightforward how instructions get executed. And we're gonna use this idea called pipelining to do that, which a lot of our setup and how we've described our single cycle processor really leads up to. So those stages you saw, the reason our textbook has them is mostly to prepare you for when we're doing pipelining. So I'm gonna start by describing pipelining with a task which is completely not processors, and that's going to be about doing laundry. So when I want to do some laundry, like I have two loads to do, I have some light colors and some dark colors. So I take my light colored clothing, I put it in the washer, to wait for that washer to finish. Then some time later, washer's done, I take everything out of the washer, put it in the dryer, then I have to wait for dryer to finish, takes a while. And then finally I take my clothes out of the dryer, fold them up, and then I can put them away. And whew, done one load of laundry. Now I can start the second one. And I can take my second, my dark colored clothing, put it in the washer. You know, I don't want to mix it, don't want to get anything stained. So put it in the washer, wait for that to finish, take it out, put it in the dryer. And I'm done. Take it all, fold it, put it away. So, does anyone have a better idea for how I should do my two loads of laundry? Anything doing here which seems a little wasteful, inefficient, maybe not something you do when you have multiple loads of laundry to do? No one wants to, yeah. So make someone else do it. That doesn't really save me time unless they do it more efficiently. So, yeah.
Start the second load while you're waiting for the first one.
Yeah, I have a lot of time here where I've decided I'm gonna do my first load, and meanwhile, right here, washer's not doing anything. I could just use the washer then. And right here, dryer is not doing anything. I could just use the dryer then. So what we actually do, and what I presume most of you end up doing if you have multiple loads of laundry to do, is you don't just do one load step by step and then say, okay, finally done with that, now I can start the next one. You start right away. So I'll put in my one load. When the washer is done, I'll put in my second one while I'm drying the first one. So I'll do one step and then advance everything to the next step. And so on. And this means that in the same amount of time where previously I could do two loads of laundry, I can do three loads and have some time left over. This is way more efficient and it's pretty intuitive that, you know, why are we wasting this time where our washer and our dryer are just doing nothing because we insist I want to do one load at a time from start to finish. Even though most of the time my dryer is doing nothing. So any questions about what we did here? So, yeah. So let's make some observations about how efficient this actually is and what advantages and disadvantages this has. So for laundry, this seems like, obviously, this is something you should do. But, you know, it's not the most efficient thing. So one thing you might notice is that when I start getting this going and I'm doing lots of loads of laundry, I have some waste. That I have this time I'm spending where I have something in my washer and I can't advance it to the dryer because the dryer is busy. And this is because, well, my dryer takes more time. And more realistically, my dryer takes a lot more time. So I have all this wasted time, which I didn't have in my single load case, where I'm waiting in line. I'm as slow as the slowest piece here, and the slowest piece is my dryer, and I need to do something funny like have two dryers in order to, you know, get rid of this problem. But right now, yes, it's faster, but it's as fast as the slowest piece, which in this case is the dryer. And I have all this time where one of my loads is just sitting there idle. And this means that in some sense, this is not the most efficient thing I could be doing. It depends what you care about. If what you care about is I am given a load of laundry and how fast is it until I give it back to you all nice and clean, then what you care about is what we're going to call latency. So latency is the time from when we start something to when we finish it. The time from when you give me a load of laundry until when I can give it back to you. So you can imagine if you're running a business in this, maybe this is something you care about because a typical customer comes in with a load of laundry and you want to give them the quickest possible time to give it back to them. And this way of doing our laundry, you know, doesn't do the best latency. So our latency here, in this case, is 2.1 hours. That's the time from when we started to when we finished. How long the person who only cares about this one thing had to wait. And this is slower because of that wasted time where we had to wait in line behind the previous thing than our normal latency. So if I was just doing one load at a time, I wanted to have the fastest service for each load, I get 1.8 hours instead of 2.1. So I could do better. But of course, you know, I'm less efficient in this sense, I'm taking more time per thing, but usually what we care about is getting lots of loads of laundry done. When it's all my laundry, I just want to get it all done. It doesn't really help me to have each one done really fast. I just care about how long do I wait overall. And later on, when we talk about processors, it's going to be the same way. If you say, my program is slow, you don't mean, gosh, my CPU's being really slow at executing that pop instruction. You mean, gosh, my CPU's taking a long time to run all the, like, 10,000 instructions in this loop. And generally, with processors, what we're going to care about, therefore, is not latency, but throughput. So latency is the time you get one thing done. Throughput is the rate at which we finish many things. So when we're measuring latency, we actually care about when things start and finish. When we're measuring throughput, conceptually, what we just care about is the time between when things finish. And when we have something in a steady state, like you see here, where every time something finishes, we add something new, we can measure that anywhere. So it's going to be the case that if I look at the time between when I start things, it's going to be the same as the time between when I finish things, because I can only start something when I finish something, because I have only, in this case, three slots. I might have more in the more general version of this, more steps. But I have to free up a step to add something. So anywhere I measure, I'm going to see the same rate. I'm going to have, in this case, a little less than an hour between when I can advance something to any step of this process. And that means if I'm measuring throughput, I can look anywhere and just say, how many loads of laundry are going past me every hour? And I can get the same rate, which is the throughput, the rate at which we are finishing things. And this doesn't really tell us much about the actual latency because we don't actually care about how long ago was that load of laundry put into the system. We're just looking at how fast are things getting out. And for our processor, this is what we're mostly caring about, because we're going to look at it, the situation, and say, how am I finishing thousands of instructions, not how long did that pop instruction take. So both latency and throughput we can measure in terms of time. So when I measured latency here, I measured it with hours. And when I'm measuring throughput, I can measure it as a time between finishes, but more commonly, we'll measure throughput as a rate, as a number of things per unit time. So here I measure it saying I have 1.2 loads an hour. We could also measure it as an interval between when things happen. You might see that sometimes. More commonly, we'll measure a rate and mean the throughput. And we could measure latency as a rate, as the rate for, if we wait for everything and do this silly thing of doing one at a time. But more commonly, we'll give it as an absolute amount of time for each thing. But the key idea is that latency, we're measuring one thing from start to finish. Throughput, we're measuring the rate at which things start or the rate at which things finish, which in a steady state is exactly the same. So any questions about throughput or latency, which I ask because common source of confusion. Okay, so this has shown you sort of the idea of pipelining. This is the high level idea, is that we have multiple steps. We start something in our first step right after the previous thing finishes. So we keep every step busy. And that's the basic idea of pipelining. And we're going to apply this not to laundry, but to circuits. We're going to have to do a few different things that we didn't talk about with this laundry example with our circuits to make that actually work. So let's start with my toy example for today. So here's a circuit which multiplies something times 3 in a silly way. So first, we add, in this case, A to itself to get 2 times A. Then we add 2 times A and A to get 3 times A. And we have these adders here, and our model for how adders work is that they're going to take some amount of time from when their inputs have a value until when their output will reflect that result. So our timeline is we input some value on this blue wire here, our initial value A. In this example, it's going to be 7. So we input 7, and once we've inputted 7, then this first adder starts working. It starts computing the value, and while that's happening, its output on this green wire is going to be changing. So it's going to change, and eventually it's going to arise at the final result that we're going to have, the actual value of 2 times A. And in this example, we're going to say that that takes 50 picoseconds. And our second adder works the same way. So after its inputs are stable, which happens after 50 picoseconds, then it's getting 7 and 14 and not 7 and some value which becomes 14 eventually but is still changing. Once those inputs are stable, it's going to take 50 picoseconds. And over that 50 picoseconds, its output's not going to be stable. It's going to change and eventually become the right answer. So after that happened, so after another 50 picoseconds, we end up with the output of our final answer, which is 21 in this case. And what we're going to try to do here is our observation is here, just like with my washer example, I have this bunch of time I'm spending where conceptually my adder isn't doing anything. And I'd like to reclaim that time to start adding something else. And what I'm going to end up with is I'm going to end up with, instead of just multiplying one number times 3 and waiting for it, I'm going to have a series of numbers I want to multiply times 3. I'm going to feed them in one at a time. I'm going to get out a series of numbers multiplied times 3. But like with our laundry example, it might take me longer to get each number out. If I look at the time from when I input 7 to when I get my result of 21, but I'm going to have more done per unit time. So in this case, our instructions are numbers to multiply times 3, and we want to get as many of them done per unit time, and we assume it doesn't really matter if we do them a little bit slower. So right now, if we look at our latency, we have 100 picoseconds latency, and because we're doing one thing at a time, that latency is also exactly the interval we can have between when we finish multiplying numbers times 3 or when we start multiplying numbers times 3. So it also gives us our throughput. So our throughput and latency are basically the same. This is going to change when we add pipelining. So any questions on our setup before we add pipelining? Use this example a lot. Okay, so let's look at sort of our conceptual way of using this circuit. And you may notice it shows up here that we're kind of missing a little bit of a detail here, which is what do we do with the result? But conceptually, we input a value for 100 picoseconds, and then at the end of that 100 picoseconds, we get our result. In this case, 7 times 3 is 21. We input another value, in this case 17, and we get our result 17 times 3, and so on. And in here, we're basically getting the result for like an infinitesimal amount of time. We have to somehow do something with that, and kind of ignoring that detail for now. And we're going to want to change this into something where we actually input values not every 100 picoseconds, but every 50 picoseconds, and get our results out. So it's going to look something like this. We input 7, and about 100 picoseconds later, we get back 20. So we have the same latency. It's actually going to be a little more. We'll discuss in a bit why it's a little bit more. But 50 picoseconds later, I input my second value, and I get that result later. So what I have going on here is that when this gets going, I'm getting a new result every 50 picoseconds or so, and so I'm getting about twice as much work done, even though the latency is the same or a little higher. So that's what we're going to want to end up with. So we're going to need to make the circuit do this, and we can't actually just leave the circuit the way it is to do this. We need to make a change to the circuit. And the problem is, well, the reason this adder knows to add 2 times A and A is because this wire contains 2 times A. And if we change the input to this adder, well, that changes that from 2 times A to some other value. And the adder no longer knows what to do. That also changes this input from A to the next A. And that second adder will do the wrong thing. So we need to add some additional storage so we track which value we work on. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to draw this line right here, dividing the two steps, and everything that crosses that line, we're going to put in a register. And that's going to be so we can remember the value we're supposed to be working on while the thing before the register is computing a new value for the next input. So our timeline looks something like this. So I'll go over some terminology things here. So a constant source of confusion is that why did I write t plus 0, t plus 1, and t plus 2? So we're dealing with multiple A's. And a value in parentheses is the timestamp of the A. So we can say during cycle T, like C might be 17, we have some A we inputted, and this is saying that this register during cycle 17will contain 3 times the A number 17, while this register contains A number 18 that we inputted, and so on. So we have multiple versions of A, and the value in parentheses says what cycle did they come from? When were they input into the system? And so our operation is going to be we input 7 here, and we get this addition to happen. And there's going to be a clock signal going on with this because we have registers, and remember the way registers work is they look for that rising edge of the clock. So we have a clock signal where we have rising edges, and each of these changes in the values if stored in the registers corresponds with one of those rising edges. So initially, what was happening, so right here, we had 7 as an input to our AT plus 2 register. And then a rising edge of the clock happened, and we got to time 2, and now we're outputting 7. And because we're outputting 7, that means that this adder will produce sometime like around here, 14. And the input to this second register here is going to be 7. So then we have the next rising edge of the clock, and we get to time 3. So at that point in time, each register copies its input to its output. So this 14 here gets copied to the output. This 7 here gets copied to the output. And now this adder is going to compute 21. And at the same time, at time 2, we were inputting our next value here, which was 17. And that meant when we got to time 3, now this first adder, at the same time we're adding 14 and 7, and the second adder is adding 17 to itself and getting 34. And so in every rising edge of the clock, we proceed in lockstep and everything moves down a step. And note that we have registers at either end, and this is how we avoid the issue of where does the value go? How do we keep the value while we're computing a new value right away? We have a register to store it. How do we make sure that we have the input remain stable for the entire clock cycle because it needs most of the clock cycle to do the add? We have a register to keep it that way. So any questions about what's going on here? This proceeds, yes.
So is the 34 supposed to be is it on the wire the input to the frame register at this point? Where does it correspond to?
Where does it correspond to? So around 34. So this is saying that at time 3, during this clock cycle 3, which is this time, we've computed 34 here. And then when we have the rising edge of the clock, this register is going to copy that value over. So at time 4 here, right after the rising edge, 34 is what it's outputting. This diagram is showing the output of the registers. So it's saying after that rising edge of the clock, that register is outputting 34. And the way you should think about registers is whenever we have the rising edge of the clock, they read their input and copy it to their output, just mechanically. And they all do it all at once, so you don't need to worry about the input changing for this. It's kind of instantaneous. Okay. Other questions about what's going on here? So by adding these registers, we solve the problem that, when we start computing a new value, the output changes. So the registers are acting as a kind of buffer to allow us to have stable inputs for the entire clock cycle, because our combinatorial logic, like adders, needs that. If we ever change the input, they're going to start doing work that's going to disrupt the output. So we need to hold their inputs the same for the entire time they need to work. And when we're doing one step for each element of combinatorial logic, that's basically the entire clock cycle. And this is how we get to actually doing this sort of computation, where most of our time our adders are conceptually doing real work. In the original example, we had all this wasted time where the adders were active, but what they were doing, for example, up here, the adder of A plus A, it was doing the work of holding the value 14 stable. Instead, we're doing that work with a register. So you may notice that I drew this where instead of it taking 100 picoseconds, it takes a little bit more. And that's because this process of adding registers is going to have a cost. And we haven't really talked much about the cost of circuit components. And largely this is because we don't deal with how do you build an adder? That's not this class. So we don't talk about how fast or slow are adders. We're going to talk a bit about registers. Since we need to add registers, we need to know what properties do they have. So we're going to talk about how registers really work. We've had this kind of abstraction where we say that we have an input, it gets copied to the output at the instant of this rising edge of the clock. That's sort of our abstraction. But registers are physical things, and physical things aren't actually instantaneous. They need some time to do things. We can't instantaneously change a voltage from 0 to 3 or vice versa, which is what the bits are actually represented by coming out of the register. So our register actually has some tolerances. So conceptually, it reads the input and changes the output, but really there's two types of things that we need to control when we're using our register. So one is that the register, just because of how it physically works, isn't actually able to instantaneously read the values of its input wires. So it's going to need some amount of time before the rising edge of the clock during which those values are stable. They don't change. So we need to arrange in our previous circuit that such that the adder is not actually changing its output. It's not still computing things. It has finished all doing all the carries by the time we get to this window here, for which, because of our register's physical design, the input can't change. We also have a window after the rising edge of the clock during which the register might be doing some work and actually setting up its outputs, because we can't just change instantaneously from 0 to 1, during which we expect the outputs to be changing, so we can't rely on our adder being able to actually do its work yet, so during which the output will be changing. So if you take a more detailed class on circuit design, you might deal with these separately. When designing circuits, we're going to abstract these away into one notion of the cost of a register. And we're just going to say that there's a register delay, which is the amount of time we need because we have a register in our circuit, and it's going to include both of these costs. And basically we're going to say that this is extra time I need in my clock cycle in order for the register to do the right thing. And when I design my pipeline circuit, like the one to multiply times 3, I'm going to set my clock cycle so I have enough time for this register delay plus the actual logic of doing the addition. That I, as the processor manufacturer, am going to be responsible for estimating how long does this adder need, how long does the registers I'm using need according to the person who designed them, adding those times together and using that to configure my clock signal to the appropriate amount of time. And this register delay is usually pretty small. Registers are pretty fast. But this is going to really come up when we talk about doing pipelining, because we want to divide things up into really small stages. And this will start becoming significant. So let's think about our prior circuit with this register delay. So what we can say is that each of these registers conceptually takes 10 picoseconds. That's just a number I chose, which is, I'm telling you, is the register delay. Our notion of register delay in this class is we're not designing the registers. The person who designs the register is going to tell you, this is how fast my register is. This is how much time I need you to have the signal stable. This is how long it's going to take to change. So you'll figure it out from them. they'll have computed that for you. And I also am saying that I've somehow measured my adder, and I know that it needs 50 picoseconds to actually do its computation. That means the inputs need to be stable for 50 picoseconds in order to have a stable output. And when I'm measuring throughput, what I need to happen is I need to be able to deal with one register and everything after it. So conceptually, what you can think of is I need to have the value go all the way through this register, then through the adder, and then right up to the beginning of the next register. Another way of thinking about it is I need to have a value come out of this register, go through the adder, and all the way through the next register. Or another way you can think about it is I need to have a value start from the middle of this register, go through the rest of it, so half the register delay, then go through this adder, and then go through half of the next register. In either case, you have the delay for the things between registers plus one instance of the register delay. So no matter which way you think about it, whether you think about it at the beginning or the end or half and half, you have register delay plus the amount of time for the things between registers. So that means if I'm thinking about how fast is this circuit, I have 60 picoseconds per clock cycle. Then I'm going to set my clock cycle to give me 50 picoseconds for the addition plus 10 picoseconds for the register delay. And that means I'm going to get about 16 billion operations per second with these timings. So any questions on how I got this number, about how register delays work? Okay. And so that's how, with our 10 picosecond register delay, we get that slightly slower sort of example. So let's talk about doing more pipelining, and we'll continue working on this example. And I want to make this better. So I got 16 billion operations per second, whereas previously I was doing something like 10. So I didn't make it twice as fast, but you know, I made it faster. So let's do more steps. So here I've divided my multiply times 3 up into 2 steps. So let's divide it up into more steps. Let's just add more pipeline registers and to store intermediate results. So let's just say we're just gonna split that adder in half. I'm just gonna draw a line. Everything that crosses the line, we're gonna put in a register. So we just divided it up and set it into 2 pieces. We divided this up into 4 pieces. So I'm making an assumption that we can somehow just cross everything across the outer, put in a register. Let's assume for now that that works. We'll get to the question of whether that's actually possible in a bit. But we've said that we're going to choose a place in our outer where we get partial results about halfway through. And we're going to have not just 2 steps, but we're going to have 4 steps. So to multiply a value times 4, we're going to do the first half of the multiply and also keep a copy of the value for later. Then we're going to do the second half of the multiply, get that result, and also still have a copy of the original value for later. Then we're going to do the first half of the second addition, and also, and then do the last half, and then we're going to get a result. And we're going to have 4 multiplies times 3 active at a time in this. And this means, yes, it will be slower for each one, but we should get more done per unit time. So let's say I did this. And let's say I did this well somehow. And I divided my adders exactly in half. So previously, they took 50 picoseconds. So somehow I figured out what's the intermediate results we compute after 25 picoseconds, put a register just before that point, and then have one afterwards. So I have 25 picoseconds for the first half of each add, 25 for the second, and I have a register in between. So given this setup, first, what's the throughput now? How much did that help? So remember, I was 16 billion operations a second. So now I've doubled the number of steps I've divided things up into. So where am I? So compute that, check with your neighbor. Someone willing to volunteer a numerical answer? You can leave it unsimplified if you don't want a calculator yet.
We take the sum of 10 plus 25, take the sum multiplied by 4, and then take the sum of that, multiply that by however many picoseconds are in a second.
Okay, so you're saying that, well, each step is this, and we need 4 of those.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is the latency. So remember we talked about time per one. So you're correctly computing the latency.
Then we take a reciprocal.
And if you're computing the reciprocal of that, you compute the reciprocal, another way of talking about the latency. But we're asking for the throughput. So this isn't very, this is something which really trips people up. It's something we're gonna, why I tried to harp on it earlier. So the latency, it's useful to know, because sometimes what we care about is how long does it actually take to multiply a thing by 3? Like, how long until we have that result? That's what you're computing. That's useful. I would like to know the throughput, because my assumption is, you know, we're doing this, we are hurting the latency, hopefully we're getting better throughput. I'm going to check that first. Later on I'll worry about, am I hurting if the latency a problem? So for the throughput, what's going to happen is I care about, one way of looking at it is how often does stuff get off the out the end? How often do I have a new value coming from that purple register? And to look at that, I need the value needs to go through the last half of the adder plus that register. So that's 25 plus 10 picoseconds. I can also look at it, how often can I insert a new value? So it needs to go through this first register plus the first half of the adder, that's 25 picoseconds. I can also just say it needs to go through any particular stage and look at the time for a stage. In all cases, the value everywhere is 35 picoseconds, which is you computed, you just said, oh, we have 4 of those stages. So we have one stage, and the throughput is the time for each stage because we get something finishing from a stage every cycle when we get this going. And that's what we're going to care about for throughput. We're going to ignore, for the most part, what happens when things start and stop, which is a thing to be concerned about, but we're mostly going to assume that that doesn't matter. So the latency is a lot slower than this, but our throughput, now it's 28 billion operations per second. And if you remember, we originally had 16 billion before we doubled the number of steps. And the purpose of pipelining here was to improve our throughput. So we didn't double our throughput by doubling the number of steps, because that would go up to 32. We got somewhere close. And you mentioned our latency, so our latency is now 35 PS times 4, as you mentioned, which is going to be 140 picoseconds. Whereas before, yes. Yes.
So that adds like an extra 10 to that. Does that impact it?
Yeah, so I'm kind of ignoring that. So you're pointing out that there's a register on both ends. Don't we have to sort of count that for latency? I'm ignoring that and assuming that we like count half of each one, and like whatever we're doing next includes that latency. But it is like something I'm not dealing with very precisely, and you have a reasonable interpretation saying, don't you need an extra 10? So, and previously we had 60 picoseconds if you did the same thing times 2, which is 120 picoseconds. So we got things almost twice as fast in exchange for making them a bunch slower to do each one, but we're doing more. And almost twice as much, but not quite twice as much. So any questions about these calculations? Yeah.
Adding more registers, say doubling the number of registers, would it eventually converge in a certain?
That we will get to next. Yes. Other questions? Yes. So next other question is, how much faster can we get? Can we just keep doing this until we get whatever throughput we like. You know, I'd like to get to, you know, a trillion operations a second. Can I do that? Well, let's look at what happens as we split things up. So we're starting out, we have 100 picoseconds of our computation. Let's say we divide that in half. We end up with 50 and 10, so 60 picoseconds per cycle. So originally we had 110, assuming we need to have things start and end in a register. And then we ended up with 60 per cycle, again, assuming things need to start and end in a register. Then we divide things up into three pieces, we end up with 43. And if we take this to its limit, let's say we can divide up our 100 picoseconds of actual computation into 1 picosecond pieces. At that point, we're spending most of our time waiting for our register delays. So we have 11 picoseconds per cycle. And as we divide it up into more and more pieces, we're going to get closer and closer to that 10 picosecond register delay. But we can't do any better. We need to have our values start in registers and end in registers in order for each stage to use it. And so if we graph this, here I'm plotting the time to complete each stage, which is the time between when we finish things or between when we start things. So this is what determines our throughput. And it's one way you could think of measuring the throughput. And if we look at this register delay, you can see that we're asymptotically approaching our register delay. And that's what we expect because, you know, we eventually get down arbitrarily close as we divide things up more and more. And we have these sort of diminishing returns. So the first time we add up stage, we get almost a 2x speed up. We don't get 2x because we're already paying for that register delay, even though it only was initially 10% of our time. And when we're going from like the 14th to the 15th stage, we get like a 2% speed up. And another way we can look at this is we can look at what's the actual rate of things finishing, so the operations per unit time, and we get something similar, that we see that we have this go way up, almost 2x, but not quite, between one stage and two, when we add the first stage, and we add our 15th stage, we get this little bit of little tiny improvement. And again, these are asymptotically approaching a maximum, which is what if each cycle was 10 picoseconds, the register delay. So they'll get asymptotically closer and closer to that the more stages we have. Does this make sense? Questions? This is sort of our natural diminishing returns. Because we have this built-in cost that doesn't get split up of our register delay, there's an actual limit to how much faster things can get as far as throughput. And of course, each time we're doing this, we're making the latency way, way worse, especially when we get down here. Like, sure, we're at 11 picoseconds a cycle, but now we have 100 times 10 picoseconds of latency just for the registers. So the other side of this question is, well, you said we're going to divide up our 100 picoseconds of logic into 1 picosecond chunks. Can you actually do that? So this is not a class on how to build adders and such, so we're not going to have a good answer to that. But I can say that often it's really hard or not practical to do that. And usually the way this is going to manifest is that, well, we're not going to divide things exactly in half. We can probably figure out a way of taking a 64-bit addition and dividing it up into two pieces, but we're not going to divide it up into two pieces such that each piece is exactly 25 picoseconds if it started off as 50. We're going to have to do something a little less elegant just because we have to like look at the adder design, figure out what's going on. It's going to be variable. There's convenient places to find intermediate values and inconvenient ones. So we're going to end up with something a bit less perfect. So let's say, for example, I'm only doing it to the second one, but presumably it would happen for the first. We end up with this uneven split. We somehow managed to make it still be a total of 50 picoseconds, which was really lucky. But we have to make one side 30 and one side 25. So what's the throughput if we do this?
Yeah, I think So I know that we can only have our clock cycle once every 40 picoseconds because the longest step in this process takes 40 picoseconds. So if we go faster than that, we can't.
Yeah, so like, yes. So the answer is we can only have our clock cycle every 40 picoseconds, and that's in fact going to determine our throughput. And this is like that dryer example I showed you. Like, my dryer was the slowest thing, slower than my washer, slower than me folding my clothes, so it determined how many loads of laundry I could do. And the same thing's going to happen here, that this slower 30 picosecond part of the adder is going to determine how fast everything can go. Everything else is going to need to wait for it. It doesn't matter that I can produce a result from here to here in 25 picoseconds. I can't use it until we're done with this first part of the adder. I need to wait that full 30 picoseconds. That's going to determine my clock time. And generally, we're going to need to look at the slowest step, and everything needs to wait in line for that. It doesn't matter whether it's first or last, everything's going to wait for it, either wait for it to be ready to get a new value or wait for it to be ready to produce a new value. And that's going to determine our cycle time. So if we look at the throughput here, we're going to get not 28 billion operations a second, but 25. And this is a pretty optimistic view of how you might split this up. And this is typically a thing which happens when we try to design deeper and deeper pipelines. We discover, well, it's actually pretty hard to split up the circuit. And so we end up not having it split up into exactly even pieces, but we have to split it up into these uneven pieces. And you might imagine that maybe even, say, in like here, we split it up into 60 and 45 because like we had two things which previously overlapped, which we don't make overlap anymore, so the total is a little higher of the amount of computation. That sort of thing might happen because it doesn't quite work out the way the components are designed that we can divide them up anywhere. So we end up with these uneven splits, and this means we get even more diminishing returns. That we have 50 picoseconds here instead of 43, and it's going to get worse and worse the further we try to divide things up. So we get all these bad diminishing returns, and that's something which also happens as we try to add more stages. So both that we have this register delay that we can never get rid of, and that we can't just choose where to divide our circuits arbitrarily and expect things to work out because, the adder has some feedback and has some ways designed where there's some places we can easily have intermediate results to store and some we can't. Because we have those sorts of constraints, we're not going to be able to arbitrarily small pipeline stages and have it actually help us, even if we don't care about latency at all. And still all these things are making latency worse and worse. So in our case here, in addition to the throughput being slower, now we have four stages where we're wasting the register delay and an additional 5 picoseconds in most of them because we have that waiting in line extra time. So the latency is much worse when this happens. So any questions about these reasons we have diminishing returns in our pipelines as we try to add more and more stages? That generally most of our benefit is just from the first few stages. After that, like, we're doing a lot of work to get a little bit of extra improvement. No questions? So now we'll move on to talking about doing this with our actual processor. So far our instructions have been numbers to multiply times 3. We're actually going to want to deal with more interesting instructions, which will have their own challenges. So first, let me talk about stages. So as you probably kind of figured out, the reason we had these stages, the real reason our textbook does it and makes this bizarre choice of what goes in fetch and things like that, is to do pipelining. That these stages will become our pipeline stages. So for right now, it's just a conceptual order. And that means, for example, we have all these different kinds of writes, and we know that because of how our data memory works, how our register file works, how our PC register works. These all actually happen at the end of the cycle. They all happen at the same time, even though we list these on different lines when I'm listing out the parts of our instruction. So we're going to actually change that. And all these reads are sort of like combinatorial logic. We put in a value into the instruction memory, and like the adder, sometime later, it computes the value of memory at that thing in the same clock cycle. It takes some time to do that, during which its output will be changing, like our adder's output will be changing, but you know, it works within a clock cycle whenever we change the inputs. So that so all these reads just happen whenever the inputs become available as things propagate. And we're going to change that where we're going to have the clock cycle dictate when we're able to do the reads, because that will dictate when the inputs actually change, because they'll be fed from registers we added to do pipeline. So we're going to make a bit of a change to the stages when we turn these conceptual stages into pipeline stages. And the big change is that instead of having six stages, we're going to have five. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to combine fetch and PC update. You might say, wait, PC update, that was at the very end. Why do you want to move it up? And the thing is that we want to have work to do right away. So right now, if we leave it at the end, we do a fetch an instruction. We decode it, we execute it, we do its memory operation, we write it back, then we do PC update, and then we can fetch the next instruction. That's a bit too much waiting. So what we're going to do instead is we're going to fetch and PC update. And since we PC updated, now we can do a fetch and PC update immediately afterwards for the next instruction in the program. Generally, when we do pipelining like this, one important thing to do is to arrange your pipeline so you figure out the next operation to do as fast as possible. Because otherwise, well, so what? You divide it up into steps, you don't have anything to do next. And we really want to avoid that. So to do that, we're going to do our PC computation right away. And you might complain, wait a moment, you can't always do the PC update right away, and we'll get to that later. We'll figure out that that is a problem that we will have to deal with. But for the common case, we can do it right away. We read the instruction memory, we find the opcode, and from that we know how long the instruction is, we compute the next instruction address. So any questions on these stages and combining them? Okay. So to illustrate adding these stages, I'm going to start with one of our simplified processors, which is the one that just does adds. So here I have my add processor, and I'm going to start by taking my picture of what the processor circuit looks like and highlighting which part corresponds to each of these stages we defined. So first we have our fetch and PC update. So this is our fetch. We get a value from the PC, put it in the instruction memory, get out the results, and split it up into its pieces. And we have our PC update, which is just add two because we only have one type of instruction. If we had multiple types, we need to also get something from the instruction memory to do that. That's our fetch plus PC update. So after that, we have some more. So then we do decode, where we take a value, take our value register numbers, and use them to read registers. We have this execute piece, where we actually do our computation. In this case, it's just always adding. In our full processor, we'd have a memory step, but this add processor doesn't do anything with the data memory. So to keep this example simpler, I'm just going to totally remove the memory stage. It's not going to be there. And that means our next stage is write back, which is the part of the register file where we take in a register number and a value and update. So these are our stages, and we're going to actually have these happen in separate clock cycles. So we're going to have multiple add instructions happening at the same time, have them go through here. So I'd like to turn this into a processor which does that, and that means I'm going to need to have registers between the steps, because as I'm reading a value over here, I want it to be the case that I'm reading a different instruction from the instruction memory, the next instruction. And that means I need to have a registers here to store the values that I'm, store the register numbers I'm reading from. Otherwise, but how do I know what the register number is? I just lost it because the instruction memory's output is changing. So there's something we need to take care of first, and that's that we have this signal here, which skips a few stages, and that's a bit problematic. If I just put a register here, then what I'd be doing is I'd be saying, well, I'm going to take the instruction that I fetched the cycle before, I'm going to write to the register number it says, but I'm going to write the value from a different instruction. We want to keep all the values for an instruction together. And what this is going to do, if we just draw a line here and add registers, what we're saying is that we're going to have, if we have like an add RAX RBX and then add R8 R9, we might have RAX plus RBX on this wire here, because that's what was computed from the earlier instruction, which got further along. And at the same time, we have 9 here. And that would be bad. We'd be writing RAX plus RBX to R9, which is not what any of our instructions say to do. So I'm going to want to follow this strategy where I do something like just draw a line across my picture that separates the stages and just put registers everywhere. So to make that work, I'm going to redraw my wires so they always go from one stage to the next stage. Like so. I just redrew that wire so it goes, snakes all the way around, goes through each stage one at a time, even though we're not doing anything with it. And that's going to make the strategy where I just say, or I just go, okay, there's a, this is between the two stages, this is between the two stages, and I just drew those lines, and I'm just going to, everything which crosses them goes in a register. So since I've done this one stage to the following stage wiring, I can just do that. And that's how I'm going to add the registers for pipelining. Questions on that? So once I do that, I end up having registers there. So these are our registers. And I'm going to want to talk about these registers, so I'm going to have a naming convention for them. So I'm going to call them based on the two stages they're between. So this first set of registers, which has register numbers, I'm going to call the fetch decode registers. The second set I'm going to call decode execute. That has the register values that we read and also the number we're eventually writing to. And the next one I'm going to call execute write back. There's no execute memory because we don't have a memory stage. And those are the value we're writing and the register number we're writing it to. I also have this other register, which I can kind of think of like a pipeline register, but it's a weird one. So most of these go between the fetch stage and the decode, like consecutive stages of instructions. This one goes from fetch to fetch. And that doesn't make sense if we're talking about a single instruction, because once we fetch, we're done fetching. But it makes sense when you think of this as a way of communicating from one instruction to the next. We're communicating from first instruction's fetch to the next. And you can think of it as kind of a weird pipeline register. It's just our PC, of course. That's our naming convention. So let's go through what this looks like with actual instructions. So here I have two instructions. I have two add instructions. And we're going to start by assuming that our PC contains the address of instruction one. And if that happens, that means that down this wire here comes the address of instruction one, and we're going to have coming into here the actual values of the two register numbers. So we're going to end up with 8 and 9 over here on the inputs to those registers. And at the same time, we're going to have the address of instruction two be computed and be sitting at the input to our PC register. So then we have a rising edge of the clock. And at that rising edge of the clock, we're going to have our 8 and 9 now no longer are going to be on the inputs to our fetch decode registers. They're now going to be on the outputs. And our address of instruction 2 is no longer on the input to the PC. Now it's on the outputs. So everything advanced forward by 1. And now we're reading instruction 2. And we have its register number. So we have 10 and 11 sitting here. Well, 8 and 9 are being output. And since 8 and 9 are being output into the register file, we actually get the values of register 8 and 9 going into the next stage, waiting on the inputs to those registers. And we have, because this is register 9 coming out of here, this register that's going to store the number we're writing to is going to have 9 on its inputs. And that means when we advance to the next stage, that everything's going to move forward. So previously we were fetching instruction 2, now we're going to be decoding it, which means that the fetch decode registers are now outputting the values for instruction 2, and they have the as input whatever the next instruction is, instruction 3 presumably. Now at the same time, we got the values that we need to add, and the addition is going to happen at the same time that we're reading the register values for instruction 2, we're adding the register values for instruction 1 that we read previously. And it advances down. So here we have the inputs, the register value and register number 9. And in the next stage, those are going to be going into the register file. And at the end of that cycle, the value will actually update in the register file. And while that's happening, our instruction 2 will advance to actually use the adder and be doing its addition. So any questions about what I showed here? The idea that these instructions sort of march down the pipeline? Okay. So this is another way of visualizing it. So here I'm numbering the cycles and I'm showing the output of the registers. And I've labeled the registers with sets for which stages they're between, and also I've named all of them. And I'm showing the output during each cycle. So initially, the only register which has a value we care about is the PC, which is outputting address 0 in this case. And because it outputs 0, that means that into these fetch decode registers, we have the register numbers from location address, the instruction at address 0 being input, which are 8 and 9, which means during cycle 1, the next cycle, those are what those registers output. And generally, this first instruction goes step by step down. So we output 8 and 9 during the cycle 1, and that means during cycle 2, now we have the values being output from the next set of registers, and so on. And this means that eventually, when we have lots of instructions to do, we end up with this state where we're doing 3 instructions at once, where our PC has the address 6. So we're fetching that instruction. At the same time, we're reading registers 12 and 13 for the previous instruction, and we're adding 1,000 and 1,100 for the second instruction, and we're storing 1,700 for the first instruction. So all those 4 instructions going on at once, and I'm showing this just by showing you the outputs of these pipeline registers, which contain all the information the instruction needs to do whatever it's doing in its stage. So I'm gonna, especially tomorrow, use a lot of these sorts of pictures to talk about how instructions look. So I'd like to make sure that you can understand what's going on. So are there any questions on what anything here means? Can you follow along what the instructions are doing? Good? Yes?
What will be the throughput inside it?
Sorry?
What's the throughput?
The throughput here. So question is, what's the throughput? And I haven't told you a lot of things you need to know that. So
What's the main deciding factor?
What's the main deciding factor? Well, so happens that the next slide is about that. So there's a lot of things we need to know about the throughput. And remember, our general rule is the slowest stage is going to determine your throughputs. So, and this applies in general, and you have to know how fast is everything. So let's think about our single cycle processor first. So let's say that these pipeline registers here aren't there. So what we need to worry about happening is that a value comes out of the PC at the beginning of the cycle. And at the beginning of the cycle, it's a new value, so it just changed. So the instruction memory needs to process that change and start outputting the address value at the instruction at that address. It needs to use that address, output that. And then that needs to go into the register file, and it needs to actually read those values. So it's going to take some time from when it gets the register number until when it starts outputting the value of that register. Then we need to actually add the two values together. And like we have 64-bit values, that's not going to be instantaneous. And then we need to actually write it to the register file, which is also going to take some amount of time. And so what we do, if you're computing without pipelining, we add up the time for each of those, and you need to be told, well, how fast is the instruction memory? How long from when I change the input to the instruction memory until when I can use its output and rely on it not being something that's just changing all the time? And how long from when I supply a register number, stop changing the register number I'm inputting, until when the register file gives me an output that isn't changing? And we need to know all of that. So we add up all those times. So we add up all these four times, and we get the amount of time we need in our single cycle processor. You may notice that, wait a moment, you forgot about the add-to. And I didn't. And a subtlety here is that while I'm reading from the instruction memory, I can add-to. And while I'm reading the register file. So the add-to doesn't matter because it's not part of the slowest path. So that's the computing the time for our single cycle processor. We worry about the slowest path from what something which changes when we have a rising edge of the clock to something which needs to be ready by the end of the clock cycle. And that slowest path, in this case, we need to go through the instruction memory, the register file, through the adder, and back to the register file. That's the slowest path here. There's another path which goes from PC to PC, but it's way faster, so it doesn't determine what we set our cycle time to. We are going to set it to the worst thing that we need to worry about. And the idea with pipelining is the same. We're worried about the slowest path from something which changes on a rising edge of the clock to something that finishes, to something that needs to be ready by the end of the clock cycle. But now we have many more things which change at the rising edge of the clock. In fact, most of them are these pipeline registers. So we need to worry about, when the register number outputs change, how long do I have to get their value input to the next stage? So we're mostly worried about the paths from one register to the next. And all those paths need to finish in our cycle time, and also we need to add in the register delay. So what we do is we look at all of them. So we say, from the PC to these registers, that's 200 picoseconds plus the register delay. From these registers to here, that's 125 picoseconds plus the register delay. From these registers through the adder to here, that's 100 picoseconds plus the register delay. We could also worry about from here to here, but that's the register delay. We don't have any extra time. And then we have from here to actually be processed by the register file, we have the register delay plus the register file write time. So that's all we have to worry about. We look at the maximum of those. We also have, I guess, PC to PC, but that's all going to be 80 picoseconds plus the register delay. The worst of those was PC through the instruction memory to the fetch decode register. So that was our worst time. So that's going to be how we set our cycle time. It's going to be that 200 picoseconds plus whatever our register delay is. So it's 10, that would be 210 picosecond cycle time. And that's going to determine our throughput. So we're going to get one add instruction done every 210 picoseconds. And if we wanted to know about latency, the time from when we start an add instruction, that is when the PC has the address of that instruction, until when its value is actually written in the register file, that's 210 picoseconds times 4, because it has to go through each of those stages. And it turns out our stages are quite uneven, that our fetch stage basically takes the whole 210 picoseconds, and our execute stage basically takes 110 picoseconds, about half the time. And this unevenness is because, well, these are not easy components to divide up into pieces. So any questions about this timing here? Or other questions about my previous add queue processor diagram? Yes?
So not all the registers will update at the same time.
The question is, will all the registers update at the same time?
Yeah.
So our rule is going to be we have one clock signal that every register is connected to, and the registers all work on the rising edge. In real processors, it might not work that way. There are other options, but we're not going to talk about those designs. But yes, there are real processors, you might hear about registers that update at different parts of the clock signal or having multiple clock signals, but we're not going to do that type of processor design at all. Yes?
So is that like a clock that connects to all the registers? Is that clock cycle, the length, determined just like as a constant or based on the biggest time thing here?
So the question is, how is the length of the clock cycle determined like physically? As part of the task of designing the processor, we're going to do this analysis. Is the short answer. So we're gonna figure out how, based on the design, how long the register should take, how long the adder should take, and we're presumably gonna be conservative about it, because if we guess too low, then bad, we'll get registers which are producing junk results all the time. And we never want that to happen, obviously. So we're gonna, based on our design, choose a value, and we're going to set that. In real processors, you know that they have different clock rates, so they do this sort of analysis instead of time. They also often have to vary that time, because the efficiency of the physical components in real processors varies depending on the manufacturing process. Like, you can manufacture a bunch of chips, and some of them, because of flaws, will not be able to handle as high a clock rate as others. Some of them will be slower. And in real processors, they commonly do things where they like take the chip and actually run this extensive benchmark to figure out how well made is this particular chip. And something they often, but not always, do is they like divide those chips up based on those benchmarks and sell them as different clock speeds. So it's just so they don't like throw them away. They just, this one's not so good. We're just going to sell it as a lower clock rate because it works there. And they do this in a conservative way where they're pretty confident that like they're giving enough leeway that it's definitely going to work. Okay, so that's all I have for today. So next time we'll talk more about this cycle time and other things we have to worry about when pipelining processors, like, what about when that PC update depends on the data memory?